@WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. Happy Thanksgiving, happy holidays, happy hanging out, happy just beat the Bears by this much. You know, I get this guy on a lot. We're not playing the Patriots this week, and we don't have a Red Sox-Orioles matchup, and nobody from the old Orioles died, thankfully, that I called Dan Shaughnessy, but his byline came my way when I was a young lad, just reading the newspaper and dreaming the dream of being Oscar Madison, or maybe Dan Shaughnessy in this case. He has a new book, and on your visits, and you know, you guys write books now, you visit even with guys like me in the old hometown, so I'm sure we'll talk a little Patriot resurgence and Ravens, but you've done a book on Larry Bird and French Lick and Boston and all that, and I guess it harkens back to your youth. I'm celebrating 30 years on radio next month, and all the cool stuff you do. This is longer back than that you're doing a lifer story, yes?
Well, after I did my 5 years covering the Orioles from 77 into the early 80s and went back home to Boston where I grew up, and I was the beat guy for the Boston Globe covering that Celtic team with the Bird Magic years when the NBA kind of got revived a little bit, a lot. And, during the pandemic, a lot of people say, oh, there's going to be a lot of babies born 9 months later. Well, there's going to be books coming out 9 months and a year after the pandemic, because that's what I got busy doing. And, you know, they were showing a lot of the old classics of Bird Magic and obviously The Last Dance. I kept seeing my young self sitting at courtside. In those days, Nestor, the lowly media sat right next to the bench. It was like being on the team, and we traveled with them. They flew commercial, waited for bags, stayed in hotel lobbies, went to practice. It was an incredible experience of great access that's never coming back. That's the way it goes. It's evolved. But so I got to be really close to the NBA, and this book's not about who won and who lost and who's got the stats, who's in the Hall of Fame. Everybody knows that stuff. It's been written and written well. This is kind of a love letter to an earlier time in the NBA when Larry and Magic kind of brought the league into the media monster that it is today. They played each other three times in the finals in the 80s, and those were kind of the Allie Frazier of the NBA. And then, of course, Michael came into the league in 84, and fast forward to The Last Dance and fast forward to the Dream Team in 92. And then David Stern made it a global entity. And today it's a big global thing, but it's never going to be as much fun, and you'll never get as close to it as we got. So this book enables me to tell those stories about Bird and Magic and Parrish and McHale and DJ and what the NBA was like in those fledgling years when it really took off to the league that it's become today.
Dan, I was so fortunate to share, you know, and we all got together, a whole bunch of Evening Sun and News American people got together down at the Guinness Brewery a couple months ago, put together by the great Molly Dunham Glassman, who I'm sure you're familiar with as well, who was my boss and a mentor and just a wonderful human. But, you know, I go back to the 80s and I cut my teeth, and Jack Gibbons believed in me enough that I covered hockey on the inside. I was at the 3 overtime game with Phil Jackman in the locker room, seeing guys cry, you know, when I'm 18 years old. Like I saw Freddie Patek when I was a kid, right? And I sat courtside with you when the Celtics came in the late 80s to the Capitol Center, because Phil would say, hey, you want to go down and see Bird play? You know, and I'd jump in his little, what do you drive, a little Nissan. You know, we'd go down and park in the Capitol Center Eagle lot. And, man, I'm in the locker room with Charles Barkley and Dr. J, you know, like 86, 87, 88. So I have some of this experience of that, but being immersed – it was larger than life, all aspects of it. And you say that it caught on. Where were you when Magic and Bird played in 79? Because I have a feeling you were at a baseball game in spring training. Because I'm thinking about, like, that pathway of that Final Four set everything in motion, right? That 79 Final Four.
Yes, you've hit it. I was at Bobby Maduro Stadium. Orioles were playing. I believe it was a night game. Who knows? That place was kind of sketchy down there off 826. It was a, you know, tough neighborhood, but that Oriole team, of course, ended up getting to the 7th game of the World Series. The 79 Orioles, very special year for me. And yeah, I remember, you know, I was still a basketball fan. Everybody was captivated by that game. It's the largest TV rating there'll ever be because of the expansion of cable. You can't get that kind of a collective audience anymore. And you know, obviously, Indiana State, the second tier conference, 33-0. Larry didn't have much to play with, you know, nice guys and good teammates, but Magic had Gregory Kelser and Jay Vinson. He had NBA guys side by side. The Big Ten was just a more serious entity, and it took Larry a long time to get over that, losing that game. And they came to the league, and the league at that time, you know, it was fledgling. I mean, the finals were on tape delay, and you know, 17 out of 23 teams losing money, and drug issues in the league, and just attendance was down and interest was down. They brought it back. So Larry's rookie of the year in 79, Magic wins the championship. They're both in the finals each of the first 4 years, but never against each other. Finally, it happens in 83, 84, spring of 84, seven game series, still the best event that I've covered. And again, they're like the Ali Frazier fights for the NBA, those three matchups they had in the mid 80s there. So it was really a chance to see the thing take off and riding on the wings of those two.
Well, you know, Dan, I'm a fan of yours in Boston. I married a New Hampshire girl. I've been doing this forever. I got in my car and drove to Fenway Park the first time they gave me a press pass in 1992 so I could be a part of all of that. And for you to say that it's still the best thing you've ever – first, I've sat at 25 Super Bowls with you. Your team's won 10 of them, right? I mean, you're in the locker room. You've covered this Brady-Belichick thing. I remember when you were just a crusty old guy 20 years ago writing about the Red Sox never winning and curses and Bambino. Now you look up later, the Celtics have won again. And the Bruins are like, yeah, you've really, and I say this to Bob all the time, all of you Boston types have been in this interesting place the last 25 years to cover all of this, and yet you still pine for Orr and Bird and Yaz.
Yeah, there's certain names that when you write about them, that still goes to the top of the website and all this. People can't get enough the ones you referenced there. You know, the Bobby Orr Bruins, the Larry Bird Celtics, you know, anything involving Pedro, David Ortiz, you know, Tom Brady in this century. But yeah, there was a drought from 86 to 02, no championships in our city. And then since 02, there's been 12. So we're in the high renaissance now. But that Celtic team in 86, in my view, is still the greatest NBA team of all time. They went 50-1 at home. They had five Hall of Famers, Hall of Famer Bill Walton coming off the bench. And I got to cover that team, be with them every day. And I mean, the Red Sox winning the World Series in 04, overcoming the Yanks down 3-0. That's the most biblical, like, story of all of them. But for an event, for a single series, yeah, I'm going to stay with the 84 because of all the Hall of Famers, the coast-to-coast 2-2-1-1-1 format, the East Coast, West Coast, the black, white, the rich guys and the gritty guys, and just the fact that the Lakers probably had the better team and the Celtics got into their heads and took it away. And, you know, you had the Kevin McHale takedown of Kurt Rambis, which changed rules in the league. They changed the travel after that. It went back to 2-3-2 like baseball. It was a seismic change for the league, and it was so thrilling to go back and forth. And we flew commercial across the country like six times. You know, Jack Nicholson would be in the same flight with the Celtics watching Terms of Endearment. It was crazy. And, of course, the Garden had no air conditioning. So it was 1,000 degrees. And picture in the book of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with the oxygen mask over his nose. Bad optic if you're a Laker fan. It was just – and it was blood and thunder basketball. It was very physical. And, you know, again – they'd all file out in the first quarter today because they were banging down there.
Well, and there were other teams too, right? I mean, the 76ers were a threat. I mean, even teams like the Bullets weren't a threat but could beat them on any given night. And the league was competitive in that way where, you know, there were always a hockey team that went 8-70. You know, in the NBA, it felt like it wasn't just one team. It felt that way for Jordan for a while, and wherever LeBron was or wherever you're sort of wheeled into it, like maybe the Braves were for a while. But that era of the NBA and the Rockets and the Knicks and drafting and then the Pacers come on. I mean, there were all those places had some teams they could brag about and players they could brag about.
Absolutely. The Celtics had a tough series with the Bullets in the first round that year because they had Ruland and Mahorn, and the series ended with Frankie Johnson and Gerald Henderson fighting each other on the floor. The Celtics finally eliminated them in the Cap Center, but it was a tough four-game series, and again, then you'd had Bernard King, who was averaging 40 a game playing for the Knicks in the next round, and then you'd play the Bucks. You'd have, you know, Bob Lanier and, you know, Sidney Moncrief, Terry Cummings, Marcus Johnson. I mean, there was no nights off. It was just, and there was no load management either, I might add. You know, I mean, Bill Walton played 80 games on bad feet in 85, 86, so they were playing every night.
Dan, if people go to Front of Baltimore Positive, I have like a repository of like 30 years of different stuff I've done. One of my favorite pictures and events, and I know I brought this up with you, in 1998, we were at the Super Bowl in San Diego, and Bill Walton was there, and you were sitting next to me, and Walton sat down and did 20 minutes. I think 15 of the 20 minutes were you guys waxing about that mid-80s era. All I could think about with Walton was the conquistadors and the red beard, and I wanted to talk John Wooden with him, and he wanted to talk Grateful Dead with me, but you've seen all of these people. This book right here, right now, obviously a heartstring for you. You could have written it at any point, point, right? And you've chosen to write other books. You're at the September, if not the August, of your days here. But in writing and choosing to immerse in writing this stuff, you know, I've got all these memoir things. I'm only 53. It's not my time yet. But when the time comes to put these things together, what inspires you to do this? Because you're not getting rich on the book.
No, it was a good project to do, and I wanted to get these stories down. And again, with seeing all those classics during the pandemic, it just inspired me to do it. Because I started calling guys, and everybody's home because no one's going anywhere these days. And Bill Walden gave it the title, "Wish It Lasted Forever." That's what Bill said. He said it was the best time of my life, and I wish it lasted forever. So Bill Walden named the book.
Best time of his life was the Celtics, huh?
Yes, because for him, you know, it was like, you know, he had all the injuries. He had been in Clipper jail for like 5 years. And then he came to Boston. He got to play 1 year with Larry Bird. Red Auerbach was the GM. And Bill, he got to be on the parquet floor and win another championship. And his four sons living in Cambridge, just this great experience of what they had. I mean, it was the whole ball of wax for him. And he still talks about it. I mean, he told me, he says, write whatever you want. Empty the thesaurus. Anything you want to say about this. It was even better than that. It was the best year of my life.
Dan Shaughnessy is talking some basketball. We don't talk enough basketball around here. We play some basketball, Coppin State. Of course, their games are here. We had a great conversation on our Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. Let Yourself Play. We're going to be doing Black Friday with Harford County Executive Barry Glassman at Conrad's Crabs this week. We're going to be at Pappas up in Cockeysville next week. There's a rumor we will be talking some baseball with Mike Bordick, among some others, next Friday as well. But for basketball, for you, is it? It's crazy to say, do you like it more than – I think of you as a baseball writer. You know, yes. Like when I think of you, that, and I stand a columnist, but a baseball guy, that I could sit in a bar for a year and talk basketball with you and football and other things. I don't know that we've created that varied sports fan in the modern era, that there's any going to be any more Shaughnessys or Ryans or Oscar Madisons, you know, or Lupicas moving forward because of this. But basketball, do you still like it? Do you still watch it?
Well, it's harder for me to watch now. And again, you sound like the old guy. It was better back then. It was better. That's part of the motivation to do the book, just watching clips from the old days. And just, it was beautiful basketball. It was the flow, the picket fence, the give and go, all that stuff. And just, you know, inside out play, and not just, again, a lot of jack in the threes now and a lot of whistles. It's just not as much flow to it now. I wish I had appreciated it more when it was in front of me. And it was the best passing team I've ever seen, those Celtics. So, yeah, I mean, I grew up, I played a lot of baseball and basketball, obviously starting with the Orioles and then coming to Boston with the Red Sox team. That's been the majority of my life's work and the books and whatnot. But I never got far from, I still watch basketball. I still love when being a high school basketball player. And growing up in Massachusetts, when I did, the Celtics won every year. So we were spoiled. We had the model franchise here, team above self, no scoring champions. And you know, all the fables of the parquet floor and the banners above and the old garden and Bill Russell and Red Auerbach. And to grow up in that culture, it never leaves you. And then to get to cover this team, which in my view, the greatest basketball team of all time is 85-86 Celtics, who went 50-1 at home. So, yeah, I'll take that. And I enjoyed it. And I wanted to get it between book covers to put it all down. It was a place to tell all my old stories. Thank you very much.
Dan Shaughnessy joins us, a longtime Boston Globe. The book is Wish It Lasted Forever, Life with the Larry Bird Celtics. All right, I want to jump into just some like some Patriots with you.
Yeah.
Because they've been resurrected. You know, my team keeps winning with 66-yard field goals and second-string quarterbacks and COVID bugs and, you know, Lord knows what's next, and well-coached, those Harbaugh Ravens. But there's a lot of well-coached going on. You know, I mean, I see Tomlin trying to run around with 100-year-old Roethlisberger. But the Belichick resurrection to me, and I talked with Dennis Colazzos from Coons Ford about this last week a little bit on the air, that this is a whole different level when you got all the money, all the titles. He's going to the Hall of Fame, the Hall of Hoodie, all of that stuff, but has something to prove. And I guess you've spent enough time. Do you know Bill? Do you feel like you know him? Does anybody feel like they know him?
Well, I mean, we go back. Don't forget, he's from Annapolis. And of course, you know, when I was covering the Orioles, he was a $25 a week assistant for Ted Marchabrota back in 77. That's where he started. And he had the connection. You know, his father, you know, coached at Navy, and Bill was a Maryland guy. He still talks about the Army-Navy game with great reverence because he loves that.
So, and lacrosse.
So being, you know, starting around the same age, starting at the same time, I've seen the whole thing evolve. And I don't worry about how he treats the media. I know what he's up to there. He's just doing the court mandated minimum, and he's not going to, he doesn't see any competitive advantage to giving long, great answers to things. And he'll talk about football. You can get him going on Army, Navy, long snapping, punting, things like that. But he's not going to do a lot with us. I understand that. He's chasing Shula right now, Nestor. I mean, that's, you know, Shula's, I think, 29 or 30 ahead of him. He wants to get that. He's going to be 70 years old in April, and I think he'll stick around to do that. And of course, what we've seen this year was a surprise. It's a gift. I mean, they were 7-9 last year, first year without Brady. Tom wins the Super Bowl. Bill's behind the eight ball. People saying, oh, you never won without Tom. And now he's assembled this team that was 1-3, 2-4, and have won 5 in a row. Everybody's fallen down in front of him now. Happened again yesterday with the Titans losing. And, you know, you guys pulling that one out kind of, you know, ruined what would have been a perfect day for New England. But they're up to the 3 seed now in the conference. They got a rookie quarterback, as we all know. Bill hates rookie quarterbacks. He's been beating them for 20 years. Now he's got one. And they're doing the whole, you know, game management thing. Nothing too risky. Protect the ball. Got a great defense. We'll see where this goes. I mean, they haven't played a lot of great teams. They have the Titans, who are kind of undermanned right now. And they've got some tough games. They got the Bills twice and the Colts after that. So we'll see where they are. But they're going to be in the playoffs. And right now, they're dangerous.
As a guy who dissects sports and tries to give insight and, you know, greater gifts to the fans, books being written about Brady and Belichick, and I, you know, I had Seth Wickersham on. It's one of many, many that will be written and all that. From the inside for you, could you go back into a corner right now and write a book on the Patriots of stuff that maybe nobody knows or heard of?
No.
Or will that piece come at some point? Because this modern era, we don't even have access to a locker room anymore, right? So it's over for us as sports writers.
Yeah, you're going to need a real insider to give it up there, like an Ernie Adams type or Bill himself or whatnot, because there's a lot of agendas being axed out here. And, you know, the Seth book is as close as anyone's come, I think. I think he had good access to all of them. He hasn't taken a side on it necessarily. He's not particularly trusted by either the owner, the quarterback, or the coach in that instance, is what you want. He did a good job.
I love how you just gloss that over. What you want is that none of them like you.
right. And I've achieved that at every level. So that's a good thing. And, you know, Ian O'Connor's book on Belichick was very, very good. It got to the core. Of course, Halberstam did a book with Belichick 10 years ago, which was excellent. Bill gave him some inside stuff on that. But the real story hasn't been told. And, you know, Bob Kraft got his agenda out in a Jeff Benedict book last year. And it's different people with agendas. I thought Seth's book was the closest that you had to it. But until, you know, like one of the mains comes out, and even then it's going to be their version of it. I thought Seth is the closest, but I'm hoping we get more before it's over.
So if I would say to you what happened there and what's happening, I can only imagine Belichick in his $8 million mansion watching Tom Brady hold the trophy up in this semi-empty place down in Tampa, and just that probably didn't sit well with Bill. I mean, I'm just thinking. I've been in a room with Bill enough to know, like, you know, SOB and a competitive and being around all the Kevin Burns and all the Browns people that came here to know a little bit of the insight on him, and then watching it, I think there's inspiration in all of that for guys who have a competitive level that you and I are pretty competitive. We were on beats, like stories, like scoops, like all that. But this is different level stuff, because I would be on the mansion, you know, having fly fishing. I wouldn't be golfing, because golfing's boring.
Bill loves his job. He loves his life. He's got the properties in Nantucket. He's got a nice lady friend, and he life is good for him. And he gets full control. He makes a barrel of money, full control. And he's got two sons on the staff there. That's not a small thing. I mean, I think you're carving out the next generation and places for them. And, you know, Steven Belichick's defensive coordinator of the team right now. It's a great thing to have that kind of a legacy, because, you know, Bill's dad was a Navy coach. And so you want to keep that going another generation. So those things he's not going to do anything more fun than this for him. This is fun for him. And to have a team that no one expected anything, playing with a rookie quarterback, and all of a sudden you're in the mix again. He's loving this. I think he loves this more than 18-0 with Brady just killing everybody.
He almost loves losing when he loses, because it inspires him to win, right? He needs to lose a little bit. He needs to get his ass kicked, right? Seriously, right? I mean, that was all part of the Browns thing of going up there to begin with, was, you know, getting fired by Art Modell and the franchise moving. He had to do something about that.
Yeah, when you've experienced the pain, it makes the good parts a little bit better, no question.
Dan, I wish you luck with the book. I wish you. Are you a pumpkin pie, a sweet potato, apple? Where do you fall on this whole thing?
Apple pie. Yeah, apple pie.
I probably saw that with you. You're the traditionalist. Yeah, yeah. Dan Shaughnessy, wish it lasted forever. Life with Larry Bird, Celtics. Go buy the book. Go read the work. Go follow him out on the social media places. And someday there'll be a Red Sox Orioles game of significance.
Again. I hope so, Nestor. Bring it back. Come on, let's do it.
Dan, appreciate you, man. Take care. Good luck with the book.
Take care. Thanks, Nestor.
Dan Shaughnessy, happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. Another Wise Conversation with our friends at Wise Markets. We are putting together turkey and stuffing and proper cranberry around here. We're going to have proper crab cakes on Friday. We're going to be doing it at the at Conrad's. All brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. We'll be doing that from 2 to 5 this Friday in Harford County and Abingdon at Conrad's Crabs with Harford County Executive Barry Glassman, as well as Eric Sauer from There Goes My Hero. And then we will be next Friday at Pappas in Cockeysville. We'll be with Mike Bordick, as well as Jim Rees, my friend from Offa Kerman, and our sponsor, Leonard Raskin. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore. Positive.